Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys and take off your shoes and socks and run you.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And this is
Jordan,
Jesse, go!
Bicycles, tricycles, ice cream, candy, lollipops, popsicles, licorice sticks, Solomon, Brandy, Raggedy Andy, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, home free.
This week on Jordan, Jesse, Go! We're joined by the great Rob Corddry to discuss Jordan working on his television program, among other things. Let's go. It's Jordan, Jesse, Go! I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Oh, it is a pleasure to have a special guest on this program every time we have a special guest. But this guest is more special than past special guests.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, at least... he's more special in the fact that he's met Oliver Stone. I think that's probably what separates him from your Ashcons.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Ashcons are probably a better rapper. Juanita's probably wiser.
Mm-hmm.
But our guest Rob Corddry has met Oliver Stone. Welcome to the show, Rob Corddry.
I've touched a hand that has touched an Oscar. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you get any of the juice on you?
Do you know what happened once? I was up at a friend's house, and his great aunt won an Oscar for, I think it's An Ordinary Gentleman, a Something Gentleman, in whatever, the 40s. His like great aunt won this Oscar, and he goes, go ahead, pick it up. And he's an actor, too. And I pick up the Oscar, and he goes, now you're never going to win one.
Oh,
is there apparently a curse?
If
is
you
there
touch, like a... that's the Oscar curse. If you touch
oh,
an Oscar,
that is
you don't
fucked up.
Win.
And
what
you were totally, gonna win one too.
What a dick,
yeah,
right?
Man,
I mean, here in 1991, I'm already destined to win an Oscar,
right, exactly.
And my friend fucking sabotages me.
Man,
oh, that is disastrous. Just think, like for example, Harold and Kumar in Guantanamo Bay.
Exactly.
If
Thank you
had not picked up that Oscar in 1991.
Yes.
I mean, that I think everyone, when the Oscars were announced that year, were kind of like, where is it? Suspiciously absent.
Just to remind me, who did win Racist Buffoon this year? Who did win that?
Do you remember who won that?
God, who
Wilford
won that?
Wilford Brimley,
yeah.
I think.
Again, it's so boring.
I know. Every time
he plays a guy from real life. That was last year.
It
was Gerard Depardieu.
Oh, that was Gerard Depardieu.
You know what? He deserved it.
It was kind of just one of those things
where he's been up so many times.
It's a lifetime achievement award.
Right, exactly.
He also won the Golden Globe, I believe, for Best Nose in a Comedy or Variety Program.
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, man, gosh.
I'm feeling bad. I shouldn't have touched that Cable Ace Award the other day.
That was what you had to look forward to, Jordan.
I've touched Webbies. I've touched Key Art Awards. I'm not winning anything.
High
Times Stoner of the Year Award.
Yep.
I kind of wonder about Oscars specifically. I think a lot about Oscars and not an Oscar for... you know, the Orson Welles Oscar for Best Screenplay on Citizen Kane. This Oscar will live forever, right? But they give the same Oscar for Best Sound Mixing. So, like, let's say the person who won the Best Oscar for Best Sound Mixing on The Poseidon Adventure, and that person dies and doesn't have any family, then what happens to that Oscar?
Somebody uncovers it.
It goes into like a secondary market, right? But what is the secondary market for Best Sound on the Poseidon Adventure? Like, what is the worst Oscar you could have? Because you still have an Oscar.
Right? They become sex toys for the absurdly rich.
Are you trying to sell me secondhand Oscars? Is that what this is about?
Have you ever seen An Officer and a Gentleman, Rob Corddry?
Oh, God.
Did you know that it won a Best Costume Oscar?
Look, I don't have any cash on me right now. I really don't.
Seriously, I don't need cash. I like your shirt. Will you trade me your shirt for the Oscar?
The answer is yes.
You can't wear the Oscar as a shirt, though. You should know that.
What do you give me for this Brene Brith Award? speaking of media.
Sure.
Okay.
Now
that's a kind of smooth segue that's paved our way to super popularity on the internet.
You are killing the internet and radio with that segue.
Yeah. They're both exploding right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, I don't know if you you know this, but I was a PA on the pilot of your television series, The Winner.
Okay, so Rob, you created a Fox television pilot called, you were starred in a Fox television program called The Winner.
Mm-hmm.
This was what, 3 or 4 years ago now?
About 3 years ago. I just started it. I had nothing to do with the...
You started it. It was created by
I had nothing to do with
Family
hiring,
guy and
yes,
stuff, right?
Ricky Blitt and Seth MacFarlane. I had nothing to do with the hiring of the PAs.
So you you sat in on the hiring of the PAs. You recognized Jordan. You recognized that glint in his eye. It signified one day this guy could win a Cable Ace Award unless he makes a horrible mistake.
Which no. I have. They still give out Cable Ace Awards?
They do. I don't know. Do they still exist? I don't think so. We haven't heard from them in a while.
Because you had a career for quite some time in exactly the kind of program that would win a
You're
Cable
right.
Ace Award.
You're right.
You should know this.
I would be ass deep in Cable Ace Awards right now.
Okay, so Jordan, you worked as a production PA,
yes,
production assistant.
Yes, and I think maybe the kind of the two noteworthy tasks that I had on that were...
Was this before or after you were working on Living with Fran?
This is after.
Okay,
is
so
after.
Just for perspective, so,
right?
So
exactly. So we can get a timeline.
Gotcha.
Sure.
Gotcha.
Jordan had already worked on the acclaimed sitcom Living with Fran,
gotcha,
created by Jamie Kennedy, starring Fran Drescher.
Now I have a picture in my head.
Sure. So I mean, obviously, I know what it's like working in a kind of a rigorous office with a lot of egos.
A lot of stars.
You know the ropes. You
yeah,
know the ropes.
Right.
You could make it through a narrow hallway despite being pulled hither and thither by various people's star power.
Exactly, yeah. So
personal,
I know what it's
magnetism.
Like to deal with a Rob Corddry, a lady from Airplane.
Sure.
The two mm-hmm. stars from.
Yep. Name three great things I did to you.
Oh, gosh.
Just the three top things, great gestures I made to you at the
well,
time. If you can. If
yeah,
you can
yeah. No, I mean,
if you can pick
that's,
three.
That's kind of the difficult part. It's just
yeah.
picking three. Well, I mean, the crew back rubs were great.
You're welcome.
And, you know, whereas, you know, I might have wanted a little more personal attention, it was
yeah.
nice of you to go around and do that.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, yeah, I mean, thank you. I said it at the time, I'll say it again. Thank you.
Okay. And now I remember you.
Yes, yeah.
Now I remember you.
I'm the one with the knots.
Yep.
Sure.
Jordan used to come over to my house on the way to work asking for olive oil. I never knew why that was.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know.
Yep.
Yeah, thing two, you crashed my car,
mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I guess in hindsight was kind of inconvenient, but funny at the time.
Well, also, you have to keep in mind that I was drunk, so
yes, yes.
It doesn't really count.
And making right. a point.
Yeah.
Trying to make a point.
At the
about
same time.
The
yes.
national debt.
And I think I think my point was made.
No, it was loud and clear.
Good.
And you know, I had to walk mm-hmm. to work, which was very inconvenient after that. But you know,
but to be completely fair, how many lots of people voted for Perot that year for just because you did that?
That, and you know what? I feel like I did my part that
right.
year. And
for the Independence Party, the Freedom Party?
Yeah, whatever.
What was it?
The Perot Army. The Perot Army.
Yeah, there yeah,
I think that's what
the
it's called.
Perot paramilitary shock troops. And, I mean, I think just three, I'm going to say Pinata.
Okay.
And it was...
enough said.
Thursday pinatas.
Right, yes.
Said.
Cordry's pinata Thursday pinatas.
Yeah. Jordan, I remember... This is something that I remember from your time working on the program. I'm not authorized to bring this up, but...
Go ahead.
I remember, Jordan, that... At this point, Jordan had been working on these Living with Fran-type programs for quite some time, several years. And so it was a great pleasure to be working on a program that wasn't, you know, notably horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the show was, you know, relatively speaking, a success compared to other television pilots, although a failure compared yeah. to successful television programs.
We got six on the air, which,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, on the scale of, that's a
yeah
something of a coup.
Yeah. So I remember
kind of against the odds in the TV business, really.
Yeah,
like I guess getting a sure, thing, sure.
Yeah. So I remember that Jordan's, as I remember it, and this is just working from my memory. Jordan's proudest moment was the moment when a PA's job, normally, obviously, for folks who aren't in the entertainment industry, is to go get somebody coffee.
Yeah.
Or we need 1,000 clipboards for this scene. Can you go to the Office Max right now?
Basically, to do what I say.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yes.
So you were running the show. So yes.
I knew what I could get away with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember Jordan had a moment where he got to do something creative. He got to contribute to the program. Do you remember this, Jordan?
Yeah, yeah. In your character's room, your character in the winter was kind of a pop culture junkie. You know, spent a lot of time watching TV, and that was kind of his frame of reference for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So they wanted your room to be filled with VHS tapes of stuff you had taped off the TV, and I got to label all of those.
Oh, that's great.
Jordan got to label the television
and,
programs.
And when I asked them what TV shows I should put on the labels, they said, like, just whatever you think the character would be into.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's called creative license.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was very
you
fun.
Had a lot of fun.
I did
you?
Had a ton of fun.
And it probably took you like 4 hours. You
it
really
did.
Milked that one.
Yeah, I neglected a lot of like coffee yep. and dry cleaning because mm-hmm. yeah.
Do you remember what you wrote on the video card? Video cassette?
Probably, God, and then I wrote the name of a show, and then I kind of came up with a joke episode title, and I think
they were definitely looking to the PAs as writers.
Yeah, sure. And I, you know, that's a good way to slip in, like, who wrote these hilarious.
Part of you must have thought, like, what if Seth MacFarlane was just walking through the set and he was like, wait a minute, this is who wrote this?
This is funnier than anyone on the staff.
He was like, who wrote this? Get in here.
Sorry, sir. I didn't. I just wanted to.
You.
Oh God! Here it comes.
Super great.
Whoa!
Here's
switcheroo.
Here's your WGA card.
Yes.
And a bag of cocaine.
Yeah.
Yes, I think my the two ones I'm most proud of. I did one that was the A Team, and this episode. Title was Explosion Party, and then Doctor Who, and then Some British Stuff Happens. This is the episode title. I think the show, I mean, you didn't
great.
See them on camera, but it, you know, it's one of those things where it informs the world.
It adds to the...
Did you ever try and, like, ply the director of photography to kind of, or the director of a given episode... or maybe a storyboard artist to slip in a shot where the camera pans across his video cassette collection.
Is there actually any of those things on a multi-camera sitcom? Like, don't they just have robot cameras set up and you hit a red button and you go?
There's a fat guy reading a penthouse that pushes a button every now and then the show starts.
Cinematographer is not a word that's bandied about a lot on the Fox lot.
I like the idea. I really like the idea of like one of these guys from Europe that Woody Allen would hire.
Czechoslovakian dude.
Yeah. Working on The Winner. And he's like, he comes to work with like a special case full of lenses. Like these are his lenses.
Yeah.
And he like attaches them to the cameras. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And then he just sits behind a console with an A, B, and C button.
Yep.
Yes.
Jordan, I'm speaking out of school, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
But without Jordan's contributions, I'd say 4-episode run. With Jordan's contributions, 6-episode run.
I will say that I remember the bedroom set being very, very realistic. The books
there
that were
go.
Set there, mm-hmm. you know, that there were videotapes was appropriate.
Yeah.
There were, I believe, action figures. No. Actually, no action figures. They're like, come on, no action figures. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't play with action figures.
You wouldn't play with
they
action figures.
They thought it was too
figures.
Steve Carell. They thought it was too 40-year-old
oh,
virgin.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because that's a comparison people are going
to
make.
But you also, I mean, to be fair, you also, your character was got really into A-Team and Doctor Who specifically.
Yes. Well, Wings was my
character's
obsession.
Was the show was like, it was a period piece set in 1992.
It's the worst idea for a show, really, when you think of it. It's way too about the writer's life. So it was like, it was a period piece set in 1992.
Sure.
And you know, and yet, and then you're looking back, my character's narrating it from the future. So yes. From like 2015.
Wait, so.
And it's playing mm-hmm. in 2005.
So this really was, this was very Doctor Who-like.
Crazy. Mm-hmm.
It was deeply and powerfully informed by Doctor Who.
It was kind of a time
travel
show. Were there also
Daleks?
Yeah. Yes.
I was going to say a red phone booth.
A TARDIS?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah,
you're on board.
Yeah,
you know what's going on. You did wear that gay scarf yeah. the whole show.
Yep, I was the fifth guy to play the winner. Yeah.
My grandmother was really, really loved Doctor Who. My grandmother is like German American woman.
Yeah,
like the most. Her two favorite shows were All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh.
And Doctor Who. Hmm. Like, I think she just watched whatever was on PBS, yeah, maybe. Probably. Like, she had no interest at all in, like, science fiction. Or she liked Dickens. Dickens was her favorite thing. She was not very, she was not highly educated, had not gone to college. She loved Charles Dickens and Doctor Who for some reason. I remember when I was, like, 9 years old visiting her in Washington, D.C. and thinking, what is this shitty-ass show? Like, what the fuck is this?
I was convinced by one of my friends that it was a brilliant show, and so I would watch it a lot and never, and always really trying to
yeah.
enjoy it as much as my friend did, you know? And, like, getting into it, but really just for his benefit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
it really, maybe it's just one of those things, like, there are these things that a nerd can like because there's things to know about. And
right, there's things to geek out about.
Yeah, I don't know, because otherwise I could not tell you the appeal of the program. And I'm going to be honest, right now I'm just baiting hate emails.
Yeah.
I think the podcast audience and the Doctor Who audience largely coincidental.
This is gonna be, yeah, this is gonna be, this is gonna be. You're gonna get more of a backlash than that time I said I hated Blackadder on Twitter.
Oh,
that was a mistake.
Did you get
paying for that one?
I hate Blackadder too.
Yeah, I hate Blackadder.
Yeah,
it's not funny.
Yeah. It's stupid.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's so dumb. I don't so understand. Dumb. I mm-hmm. like a lot of the people involved.
Good idea though. Like I wish they would do something like that now, where it's set in a different time period every year. Mm-hmm. You know, The Onion just had an article about TV shows mutating. Did you guys read that?
No,
about
I
how,
didn't.
Like,
no,
Valerie's family became Hogan's, and then the Hogan family, and it just got rid of her. And then like Charles in Charge's second season, he was in the same house but with a different family. So the implication being that he like stayed in the house as people moved in and out of it.
Did they bring up Family Matters in that article at all?
No. What was the
What bothers
you about that one?
It starts out kind of, you know, Cosby-esque sitcom, kind of wholesome family sitcom. And I remember at the end it was about Urkel shifting shapes and then having a robot that was becoming
yes,
sentient.
Yes, there was a robot Urkel that he like almost had to fight against.
Yeah, the robot was becoming too aware. It was a Terminator situation.
Oh. Well, that's scary.
And then I think there was also time. I mean, I just remember
was there,
seeing
I
that.
I think
and
he
going,
had an.
What the
I think
fuck?
Urkel had an evil twin too.
Yes,
probably.
Urkel was really getting around.
Well, he started to throw his weight around the set, I think. He's like, come on, let me do something else.
Right.
I'm an actor. I'm classically trained.
I remember as like, you know? I remember as like a 6-year-old, a really key worry in my, you know, there's this, you when you're really young, a big part of your life is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What like
stuff
you just
is. Sure.
don't
sure.
know what the fuck is like. There's some like even the things that you do know them, you're still not sure because you only just figured that out, and you've been burned before, you know. And I remember two things specifically that I loved that I could not wrap my fucking head around. One of them was Mr. T. I knew he was on the A-Team. Because we got A-Team reruns.
Mm-hmm.
When he had it, and I was vaguely aware that there was a cartoon of him, but I don't think I had seen the cartoon. I think the cartoon came on in, like, I was born in 1981. I think it came on maybe 1984, 1985, when I was just a little bit too young to really get a cartoon. So when I'm a couple years later, I know that there was, and I also knew him, again, from received information to be a professional wrestler, which I guess is something he did after the peak of his career. But that was so that was more.
I think he started off as a wrestler and then went back to it.
I think he started off as Sylvester Stallone's bodyguard.
Oh, you're right.
And then he put him in Rocky.
Yeah, that's right.
As a child, just being fucked up in my mind, just my mind just twisted into pretzels by who is the real Mr. T? Because he's like, because the Mr. T is also like, he was also a sort of a public figure at the time.
Well, there's that famous shot of Nancy Reagan sitting on his lap.
Exactly.
I've never seen that.
That must have destroyed you.
Yeah.
My God.
And
how are
so
you
there's this
that?
Real life
the thought
Mr.
of that
T.
is destroying yeah. me now.
There's real life Mr. T, right? Yeah. And that is a man who's going by the name Mr. T.
He's playing a character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In real life, sort of like Pee Wee Herman was doing at the time. Yeah. Then there's wrestling Mr. T, which is a wrestler who has the same name as the real life Mr. T and is the real life Mr. T, but he's a wrestler and exists in the world of wrestling. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's a different...
And then there's a cereal, and you just shit your pants.
I did shit my pants at the time.
Yeah. You know, that definitely seems to be a trend that doesn't exist anymore, is kind of taking that real-life celebrity, a Mr. T, a Hammer, a New Kids on the Block, and making a cartoon out of them. Harlem Globetrotters. I was actually just talking last night to somebody about how many cartoons the Harlem Globetrotters popped up in.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And then did they have their own at one point too? I know the Scooby Doo was their big launching pad.
Sure.
Yes, I think there was a standalone Globetrotter cartoon.
Did you go see the Globetrotters? Somebody was telling me they went to see the Globetrotters and it was real boring.
It wasn't me.
I went to see the Globetrotters once. I don't know what that is. What is that anymore?
I've never heard the Fast and the Furious movie, and that was real boring.
I've never heard those words in the same sentence. The Globetrotters were boring.
Yeah. I know. Can you know? Imagine?
There wasn't enough antics? I don't understand.
I just heard an article that the Washington Generals have actually won twice.
Really?
They've won games twice. One they just claim to have won because they're an actual real team and they're really out there to win.
No,
yes,
they're not.
It's not rehearsed.
They are. And number one, they're not a real team. And number two,
they're
not
a real
team,
but they are out there to win. And they
do they get like a special bonus if they beat
I'm sure they'll get money taken away if they actually win. They're not told to lose.
Yeah.
They won one and they changed the scoreboard so that the Globetrotters won, and then they really won one game.
Wow.
Yeah. The original owner just died or something. Somebody, it's a separate owner.
No, it is not. Yes. The Washington Generals are not owned by a
call
separate
in.
Person.
Callers? Callers? Yes. Call in.
That's outrageous.
It's completely a different. And, you know, they used to be called, there used to be like, you know, eight different teams that would just put on different uniforms.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they would be the, whatever, Kentucky Rebels. And,
sure.
But I believe now they're just the Generals. They're just the Generals now.
Right.
And they really play to win. And
true
like
or not, I like this version
kids.
Better. That's what I choose to believe.
They're college kids who choose that over going to like Europe and
you
playing
know what?
European basketball.
You know what I really like? This is something that I really like. Speaking of barnstorming sports teams, when I was a super baseball nerd, in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, there was this barnstorming baseball team that would play against semi-pro teams and also against Negro League teams. It was one of the few white teams that would play against Negro League teams, called the House of David.
What?
And this team was the Jewish, it was like the Jewish version of the Negro League's teams.
Wow.
And they because it was the time, you know, it was sort of vaudevillian, they wore like forelocks and big beards, and like many of them were not Jewish.
Wow.
Just to be clear. But if you want, but they were one of the top earning barnstormers. It was like a big deal to play for the House of David team. Like, it was a big team if you weren't in the major leagues. And so the players would grow giant beards in order to try and be on, like, if you got signed to the team, like, you, there was like a period where you had to just grow a giant beard before you were allowed out onto the field. Uh-huh. and forelocks, and you had a Star of David uniform in the whole nine yards.
There you go.
Thanks, Jordan.
Well, that's true.
There's something
that exists.
I just say the word baseball and Jordan just shuts down. It's just a...
I mean, I guess we could riff on that. Hey, what about the Viking team, right? Was that something? They wore pelts and horn hats.
You could segue into a slightly different topic. You don't have to riff on that.
Okay. I'm sorry. You know, I was being rude.
Our whole operation is falling apart at the seams.
Yeah, don't you
I blame
wanna,
Rob Corddry.
Don't yeah. you want to ask me a question or something?
Oh, God.
What do you think about Jesse's baseball story?
I thought it was a perfectly good story. Rob Corddry was impressed with the giant beards and the whole nine yards.
I like
yards.
The beard thing. I like that they had to make that, like, probably 9-month commitment
right.
to grow a beard like that.
If you were touring with, let's say you weren't a film and television star, we're going to make that
impossible.
Presumption.
Impossible yeah. to consider.
If you were at the stage in your career that you were at maybe 10 years ago and you were touring with a UCB touring company type operation.
Sure.
Would
a lot
you
of corporate retreats?
Yeah, would you be of, willing to yeah. grow a giant beard in order to participate in a Jewish themed barnstorming comedy group? There's a question for you, fuckhead.
Man, I would love an excuse to change my appearance for
yeah,
something.
I would because, yeah, I love any excuse to grow a beard. Mm-hmm. Or anything.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I have not enough beard to grow a beard, and so I think that any opportunity that I had just to see how much beard I could make,
yeah.
because I don't have enough to do it legitimately, it would only be embarrassing. But I really want to know how much beard I could make.
Yeah, man, I have a thick beard, but I have never been able to do it past a couple of weeks just because
so itchy, right?
I hate itchiness.
Oh, it's so itchy. It feels like you've been eating a candy apple.
Really? Yeah.
And it's hardened on your mouth, mm-hmm. and every time you open your mouth wide, it cracks a little bit. It's
yeah.
horrible.
Oh, my
also,
goodness.
Also, there's three wasps on your face at
yeah,
all times.
Always, just crawling around.
I feel like my whole goal in life is now to like set up situations where I can find out how much beard I can grow.
Yeah.
Without embarrassment. Do you remember Mustache March? That was a complicated scheme we had a few years ago. when we were still in college, I had this idea that we were going to start this thing called Mustache March, where in March, and then I later, after that failed, I turned the schedule back, and I tried to convince people to do Mustache May.
It's harder.
But it was where I was going to get Jordan and
Mustache
and
July,
then
less catchy.
Then Sound of Young America co-host Eugene O'Neill to grow mustaches with me for some kind of charity something that we would do on the radio. They would not go for it. I would like, this is a free pass to see how much mustache you can grow. Like, if anything embarrassing happens, and I think what it came down to was that at the time, romantically speaking, I was spoken for and they were not.
Uh-huh. There you go.
And so I was essentially pitching them a dry spell of 1 month.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A smoochless month.
Anyway, we have a lot of cool stuff to come on Jordan Jesse Go. We'll be back in just a second with myself, Jordan Morris, and of course the great Robert Corddry. It's Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Rob Corddry, you get to introduce yourself, and you get to make up a nickname.
Rob Corddry, wearing pants.
I like it.
Good one?
It's
Pants wearer.
Yeah. I mean, it's
covered
kind
in
of
pants.
Charming.
Yep, covered in pants. That's the winner.
Your cohort Seth Morris when he was on was a tall glass of faggot. if that gives you any kind of like bar.
Oh boy, that's been said.
But I think covered in pants kind of torpedoes that
covered,
one.
Covered in pants?
Yeah, covered in pants is really solid.
So, Rob, I this is something I wanted to bring up. Rob, you kind of are a recent-ish New York to L.A. transplant, right?
Yeah, 3 years almost.
Yeah, yeah.
I read about Rob when Rob first moved here to Los Angeles. I read about his apartment or his house, his rental unit in the New York Times apartment section.
In the magazine.
Wow. Yeah, in the magazine they have go through a famous person's house.
Dwellings? What is
dwellings.
It called?
Dwellings. I think dwellings sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. J.J. Abrams was in before me. That's not to drop names of famous directors.
Yeah.
Were you pleased with the piece?
Did you feel like
actually
made you look cool?
I was like, I really don't have anything. I don't know what you're gonna do. It's a rental. It's not really. I don't really feel like it's ours. And they kind of walked around and was like, oh, this is great. This is great. And yeah, I think I ended up looking like I had some pretty cool stuff.
Did they just like send a lady to do it?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Was there a photographer?
Separate? There was a photographer, and then I guess a producer with them as well, or maybe the writer.
Wait, a producer?
No, because the writer called me.
There wasn't producers in newspapers.
Well, it was a woman that was not taking – she wasn't the writer, and she wasn't taking the pictures, but she was kind of –
you know, making sure
that
making
shit
got sure, done.
Rob,
yeah.
I don't mean to be rude, but I think that was just a stalker. I think she just they assumed that she was with you, and you assumed that they were that she was with them.
I get a lot of emails from her.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Weird.
Are they
follow-ups?
Darkly sexual?
Yes, but she said they're always like subject is FYI. Mm-hmm. Or BTW or you know.
Have you ever thought about putting a in your basement?
Some stuff like that.
Like a fuck machine, for
stuff
example.
Stuff like that. Yeah. And I just thought she was kidding. I was like, this is funny. She's funny. This is a fun pen pal situation.
Oh, she wants to kill me again. She's great. You figured it was one of those intellectual New York Timesy kind of things.
Yes.
Maybe, you know.
I just so want to be part of that gang. You know, that
you're willing to let them sodomize your wounds.
This crazy woman.
Like, sure, there's like an automatic dildo pumping machine that you had to buy and install in your basement, but if you get to meet Paul Krugman, then it's all worth it.
You get to hang with A.O. Scott for a day.
You were just in New York City, though, right?
I was.
You did like a week in New York City.
Yeah, and I'm actually on Sunday. I don't know when this is coming out, but the week that you may or may not be listening to this, I have to go again. I just wanted to see what your feeling was, Rob. Do you miss New York terribly?
Yeah, I do, for sure. However, now that I have two kids, mm-hmm. one being 3 months old, I realize how much easier it is to live here, you know? Because kids, you know, I was just back there a couple weeks ago, and they have to dress kids in layers, and even if it's not raining, they have to put like a rain slicker over a stroller. It's like, my kids don't even have long sleeves. You know, there's like, we might have a sweatshirt lying around somewhere, and it's so much easier.
Seriously, the first 4 months that Rob lived here in Los Angeles, they hadn't gotten their stuff from New York. He forgot to buy his kids pants.
Yeah.
I literally wear the pants in my family. The only one.
No one else.
I'm the only one.
That's why it was remarkable enough to use as a nickname.
Oh, no, people call me that. You think I was making a joke. No, covered in pants, Cordray. Yeah. Here he comes.
Here comes old Pantsy.
Old pants guy.
That says to be distinguished from Mrs. Cordray, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just a pantsless
situation.
Sure.
No pants.
Yeah.
So it's just easier?
Yeah, it's easier here. But that's about it. I want to die. I want to die in New York someday. Not soon, but I want to die in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
In Brooklyn. And but in the meantime, you know, I'm gonna live here for a while because it's very easy to live here. I like driving. I enjoy driving.
Yeah.
I had a car in New York. I used to drive to work every day, which was great.
What is it about drive? Do you have like a radio station? Do you have a mix? Why the pleasure in driving?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I listen to a lot of different. I have like three things that I listen to when I drive,
uh-huh.
and I'm always make sure I have them, either you know on my iPod.
Elton John, Yellow Brick Road.
Thank you.
Number one.
Yep.
The soundtrack to Battleship Potemkin.
And the CD that you bought at Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
We stinked them. So I had this kind of trip to New York. I'm having kind of, you know, version two of that coming up. And it seems to me that, you know, kind of when you're my age, kind of people have... There's this kind of hegemonous reaction to New York City, and that is kind of a two-part thing. It's, oh my God, there's nothing I want more than to move to New York, and that's kind of followed up by, I totally belong there. Mm-hmm. This kind of people, everybody kind of feels that when they go there, and I was never really on board. I'm like... you know, this is very fun. You know, absolutely, I will not deny the total, you know, way out in front coolness that New York has on basically everywhere else on the planet. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, nah, it kind of smells bad and it's hard to get around. So that was kind of my feeling going into it. But this particular time that I went was really, really fun. Was like really fun, and I really felt that, like, you know, this would be a cool place to live feeling for the first time. And I think it was maybe specifically because I was there with work and kind of having the bill footed for food and cabs and stuff. Maybe that was it. The expensiveness was now out the window.
It is cheaper to live here. For sure. Yeah. I mean, not much, but it is definitely cheaper to live here.
But the one thing that didn't jive with me, there's that feeling, there's that I would love to live there. I totally belong here. No matter how much fun I was having, I never felt like I belonged. I always felt like I was poorly dressed.
Yeah. Always either too hot or too cold.
Yes.
That was my experience as well. Always running up and down stairs.
I couldn't move to New York City. Teresa and I have talked about moving to New York City. She went to college there. All her best college friends live out there. You know, she could have taken the New York bar instead of the California bar in 6 months, but I would still be living in a major media capital where I could get a Rob Corddry to come over to my apartment to tape a radio program. But ultimately, I couldn't deal with it being too hot and too cold.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up in San Francisco, and my internal temperature
is temperate.
So fucking pussy.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, as soon as I can handle it down to 50. Like, some people are like a lot of people go to San Francisco, and then when night falls and it's 55 instead of 70, then they're like, oh, it's so cold. And I'm like, what? Like, you fucking live in a place where it's like -20 in the winter.
Yeah.
Like, but as soon as it gets below 50, I'm fucking freezing. And as soon as it gets above 80, like literally, if it's 85 degrees, I'm like melting. Like, my brain is like, I'm like passing out. That's ultimately the make or break for me with New York.
I always think too, it's easier to get, I don't mind the cold because it's easy to get warm, but it's really hard to get cool. And the summers in New York are brutal. Like, August in New York is stupid. I feel like people on the East Coast, people on the East Coast aspire to live in San Francisco the same way that people aspire to live in New York.
I aspire to live in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, where are you from? You're from D.C., right?
I'm from San Francisco.
Oh, okay. But, you know, it's also like, it seems like it has a lot of the same charm that New York has. But with better weather.
Yeah.
The weather, you know? It does. Although there are big differences. I mean, the biggest difference is that New York is a huge major media capital and San Francisco isn't. I mean, ultimately, there are like so many things that you can do as a job in New York that you just can't do in San Francisco.
It's also really hard to get out of New York.
Yeah.
You just drive a little bit out of San Francisco and you're in the country and it's
gorgeous.
You're
a whole different thing, yeah.
And in New York, you drive the same distance and you're in New Jersey.
Right.
Or Staten Island. And it's horrible. And it's pretty gross for a couple, like maybe about 100-mile radius. It's pretty gross.
Yeah, how far do you have to go to get to any kind of majesty?
Well, you get up to like Connecticut, where it's gross for a different reason.
Yeah.
You know?
What specifically?
Like Greenwich is all J. Crew stores. Just J. Crew. One on every corner, you know? And
It's like Dunkin' Donuts in Boston.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe like the Berkshires is as close as you can get. It's about 2.5 hours away from New York, and
that's a sizable distance, though,
because that's
a little bit too far to drive there and back in one day.
Well, also too, my first like maybe I was in New York for about 13 years. My first 5 years or so, I definitely felt trapped. Like, I loved it, but I felt trapped. Like, I couldn't leave. I didn't have the money to leave. I didn't have the means to leave. You're stuck there, and it feels that way.
You know, and this is something I also noticed. You know, when I visit there, you know, we have a handful of college buddies out there that you know, that I try and hang out with. And there's definitely, it seems like when you move to New York, you try and keep your motion to a minimum. Like, I feel like I'm kind of trying to meet up with people, and I'm, you know, staying in one part of town, and they're in another part of town. I'm like, hey, you know, if you come to, you know, Chelsea where I'm staying, I hear there's this great restaurant, we can go to this show. They're like, why don't you come to Brooklyn? There's a great bodega that has a steam tray with five tamales that's just across the street from my house that we can eat at. Like, really? Is that going to be as fun as coming down here and going, they're like, it's as good, you know.
Yeah.
I feel that way in Los Angeles, though. Like, if I was going to
More so, I think, in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I feel like I've never felt that way so much as I do in Los Angeles. Like, hearing you say trapped, like, no matter where I am in Los Angeles, I feel trapped where I am, because everything, like, there's no two things in the same place unless you're in a mall, and I always feel trapped in a mall. So I feel like there's no place I can be and, like, do multiple things and, like, see people I know. You know what I mean? Like, even when I say people I know, I'm using the broadest definition of people I know, you know? Like, I'm including, like, you know, the guy that works at the corner store in that list.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, I can fake it by living here in the New Yorkist bit of Los Angeles here on the, you know, the street that they use to set movies in New York.
Right.
But, like, at the end of the day, like, there's only so much I have to say to... 27-year-old Oaxacan woman with who's 3 feet tall, 3 feet wide, and has 7 children, which is like the primary demographic of my block. You know what I mean? Nothing against it, but just, you know, not a lot of shared ground there.
Rob, you mentioned you're kind of a Los Feliz guy. Is it the you know, kind of hip getaway that people make it out to be?
Los Feliz is a northeastern kind of hip neighborhood in Los Angeles.
I believe I live in Franklin Hills, which is just kind of, you know, by the Shakespeare Bridge and the high school over there. So I live actually
like... That's a good bridge. Like, that's
it's a solid bridge.
Like, every time I drive across that, I'm like, all right.
You know what I use it for? I really like it for crossing.
I cross every time I'm over that thing. I cross.
Because otherwise I'd have to ford, and I don't want to ford.
No. You're not going to ford through Franklin Hills.
Sometimes when I'm crossing, I'll linger.
Yeah.
But I like the vibe over there a lot more than I do anywhere else in the city. I lived in Larchmont as well, and that's a very kind of Westchester suburban, rich suburban vibe.
Larchmont's really intense. Larchmont is the nearest to where I live here in Koreatown. If you want white people stuff, Larchmont is the nearest place to go. So, like, Teresa goes, the specific things that we go to Larchmont for are
the farmer's market
and Teresa buys her coffee there.
Sure.
So
you want, like, a $10 sandwich too, like, that's where you go.
Those are great sandwiches.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah, sure.
Oh, and bagels. Like, we'll go there for bagels too. Like, these are things not available in Koreatown.
No.
So it's the nearest place, and I just, like, I've spent, you know, Teresa and I have been together since high school, and she grew up in Mill Valley in Marin, which is a very, largely a very Tony place. Mm-hmm. You know, she did not grow up in a Tony family, but the place where she grew up, you know, is a rich white people of privilege place. Mm-hmm. But Larchmont, just that little strip of coffee shops and shit, it just explodes my brain with the extent to which these people are just at leisure. Rich,
always in white, expensive running suits.
Mm-hmm. Expensive. Like, that is the thing that
healthy.
Nothing
with an iPhone in some way.
Nothing amazes me more than the amount of when I look at some dude's outfit, and it's dudes too, not just ladies. Mm-hmm. When I look at some dude's outfit, and I think how much money he spent on those clothes to look like a total fucking slob. Like, these people wear the most, it's not workout clothes, they wear the most expensive sweatpants.
Yeah.
Like, I look at their sweatpants and I'm like, holy shit, they got those fucking sweatpants at Barney's.
Yeah.
Like, those are $250 sweatpants. Like, they're just sweatpants, but they're $250 ones, and they just have, like, a faded thing that says Brooklyn on the pocket or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just flabbergasted by that every time. It just freaks me out.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes think of maybe kind of relocating to someplace hipper. I live in West Hollywood now. Mm-hmm. A very nice apartment complex, but I mean, definitely, you know, in the middle of lameness. It's definitely a
great apartment, but that is an incredibly lame.
Sure. I'm on the same block as the Laugh Factory, if that gives you kind of any indication as to what's going on.
And he lives right near, let's say you were a guy wearing an Ed Hardy t-shirt.
Oh, is it like that Melrose block of douchebaggery?
It's a sunset block of douchebaggery.
But yes.
Okay. All right. I think I see what you're saying. I know what you're talking about.
I sometimes think of, you know, relocating to maybe in Eagle Rock, maybe a Glendale or something like that.
I love it over there.
But a couple days ago, they opened up a Trader Joe's right across the street.
Oh, fuck.
I am there for fucking life now.
Oh,
I can
locked
walk.
In.
I can walk to get a trio of hummus dips.
Oh my God.
That's how they get you.
Yep. I'm a lifer now. I'm just going to sign a contract with that apartment.
Holy shit.
You might as well just
tie a rope to your leg and tie the other end to the Trader Joe's at this point.
I live right near the Trader Joe's in Silver Lake.
Yeah.
I don't really
Do you ever go to that place, Say Cheese, next to the Trader Joe's?
Yeah. Good sandwiches.
I worked there for like 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Guy a douche?
I remember when you worked at that cheese store. That was the weirdest pairing of man and employer in history.
I've never been worse at a job. I have never been worse at a $6 an hour job. I've never been worse at any job, but like, yeah, I definitely failed more
Rob
spectacularly.
Rob Corddry, I don't mean to be rude to my closest friend Jordan Morris here, but look at this man and tell me if this looks like a man who belongs in a cheese store.
No, I couldn't buy cheese, nor pate.
Yeah.
Nor a sparkling fruit-infused water.
Yeah,
from you.
All of which they sold.
Of course,
there was
very
actually,
reasonable prices.
There was actually an instance of a customer telling the owner that I needed to clean up, quote-unquote, this is a cheese shop, not a mechanics.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Wow, yeah.
And he told me about that, too, which kind of seems like a dick move.
Yeah.
It was his way of saying, clean up, because you look like you work at a mechanic.
Yeah.
here's a funny story,
here's
man.
Something that a
Jordan,
lady said.
You're going to like this one.
Yeah.
But seriously, you look like you're working at mechanics.
Yeah, but also, just to be accurate, say that in the most comically stereotypical gay voice you can muster.
Yeah. I've met that guy.
Yeah. God, love him.
Well, what's special about a Trader Joe's supermarket?
Tell me.
Well, okay, so you're... Wait,
besides,
I'm sorry.
Besides the gorgeous women.
Oh, well,
full to the rafters.
Yes.
With beautiful pedicures and tan skin.
Yeah.
Perfect skin.
You know, sorry
about my erection, guys. I want to apologize.
Hey,
I just
fine.
Realized, like, I had, how long has this been like that?
Rob, I'm feeling it too.
Okay,
look,
okay,
look,
good, good,
we've
good.
All got bone zones. You know, LA definitely has the reputation of having the world's most beautiful people. You know, but that kind of comes that kind of statement is assuming you have a very specific taste in women.
Yes,
which I do not have.
No, I don't.
Sure, sure.
I don't have that.
Or I guess maybe a not that specific.
Yeah.
I guess a broad taste in women. But if you do, if you do like a girl in a knee length skirt, if you like a little pair of Buddy Holly glasses, you're gonna want just hang out in an LA Trader Joe's and just watch them parade by and buy legumes.
Yeah. Here's the thing: they got second rate produce, and they got a tiny meat section.
Yeah.
So those are the disappointments. But there's no better prepared foods.
The meat's expensive too.
Yeah, the meat is expensive. There's no better prepared foods,
okay.
and you basically can buy for all other products besides those two particular areas, which granted are staples.
Very, very important.
Can you buy dry goods there? Do they sell like your napkins and your
Yeah, you can
toothpicks.
Get like an Earth First napkin.
They have
something.
A very basic selection, but yes. And what you find immediately is you're like, oh, I'm eating fancy organic store quality foods, but I'm paying less money than I was paying at the regular grocery store.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's ultimately the secret is that you get to eat, and they also like their quality is very consistent. I would say, like sometimes you'll eat something that you don't like necessarily. Are we back onto trying to get sponsored by Trader Joe's?
It was definitely a twinkle in our eye at a point, but hey, I think we should make the push again.
Yeah.
I'm just disappointed. They used to have a really great fake Dr. Pepper called Dr. Joe's.
Mm.
They don't make it anymore.
Really?
It's too bad. It was really good, and it was non-caffeinated, which was really great for me. Very fruity. It was a fruitier Dr. Pepper, which I like.
Oh.
I really like that.
What flavor is that?
What is the flavor of Dr. Pepper?
Yeah.
Well, as the former president of the School of the Arts High School Dr. Pepper Club, I can tell
you. Go on.
I can tell you.
That was you?
The flavor of Dr. Pepper was meant to suggest the odor of an old-time pharmacy. So it's essentially, if you think of what was available.
It's a phosphate.
Yeah, if you think of the various flavors of phosphate that were available in 1910 or 1908 when Dr. Pepper was invented, and you know, they're like, they're fruity flavors, and then sarsaparilla and cola.
Okay.
So you're basically looking at, if you mix all of those flavors into one flavor, you get Dr. Pepper.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Isn't that fantastic?
Great. Yes.
And there's no prune juice. That's a myth.
Talk about asking the right guy the right question, huh?
Yeah. Aren't you glad you came in? Are you guys glad you came in today?
And I'm really kind of jonesing for a Dr. Pepper.
You
right
didn't
now.
Just you it wasn't just an opportunity to say you were working and you so you didn't have to take care of your children.
You have got me nailed. That is the Yes, of course I'll do your podcast. When? When?
Is it 8 hours?
Friday? That's 2 days from now.
Can we do some warm-ups before, like some pre-podcasting?
And my mother's in town, so I was like, more of an impetus to get out of the
house. That's a good
opportunity.
That is an excellent opportunity. What I like about New York City, to get back to New York City, is I feel like, A, people are trying, and B, they give a shit. And that's a part of, that's something that I... That is the thing, I think, the cultural thing that I feel like I miss the most in Los Angeles. Like, to the extent that anyone gives a shit in Los Angeles, I feel like, and this is just the general miasma, and it's most certainly covered by my own personal bigotries. To the extent that anyone gives a shit in Los Angeles, it's about their desperation over something related directly to themselves.
Narcissism.
Whereas,
I think you nailed it on the head.
Like, if I think of the annoying hippies in San Francisco, compared to the annoying hippies in Los Angeles, like, how much more would I love for someone to tell me about how they think that gays should be able to marry dogs relative to, like, just whatever their most extreme liberal cause is that they believe in so very much, relative to them telling me about how they're doing a master cleanse. Which is like the same thing, only completely centered on yourself, with no, like, they're both kind of flaky and crazy and too much of the thing.
Yeah.
But like, one of them is about like doing some weird thing that's only for yourself and like carving out some me time. And the other one is about making the world a better place.
Yeah.
Like, that difference is, to me, is like the thing that I'm that I like freak out about.
Yes.
Yes.
Shut it down.
No,
that's
you summed
say.
It up. That's, I think you ended that conversation. You definitely summed up something that I've always been unable to articulate about New York City.
When you're a Californian, this is the thing. When you're from Northern California, the world, you live this life, your entire life, with people, anyone who doesn't live in California, thinking of you as being the person, the LA person they've seen on TV in like an on the spot report about the Venice boardwalk or whatever. Like, that's what people think of you as. And so, you know, like, if you can, if they've been to San Francisco or something, you're just so grateful to not, like, because they think you're like, oh, these California fucking hippie, whatever, blah, 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 blah. You're like, no, it's too different.
Yeah.
They're different. They're both ridiculous. Don't get me wrong.
San Francisco's a pretty dirty place, too. Like, it's a gritty city.
Yeah, it's an urban, you know.
It is definitely, like, it reminds me of New York in that it's a very kind of gritty.
Although, I will say for San Francisco relative to New York, and I would hesitate to make any kind of argument that San Francisco is better than New York, because New York's a pretty amazing place. But one thing that San Francisco does have on New York is they keep their trash in trash cans and alleys. Rather than in piles on the sidewalk.
Good point. I can't argue with you.
Makes a big difference.
It really does. And smell?
I kind of wonder, like, Rudolph Giuliani figured out all this different shit that people people who weren't from New York would be really bothered by about New York.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who hadn't just come to accept it. You know what I mean? Like, figured out how to, like, reduce the murders, especially for the rich people. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, all this different stuff that he did through his, you know,
broken windows
with his various jackbooted thugs.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, why couldn't he have figured out a way to get to set up the sanitation system so that the trash went in garbage bags that went in garbage cans that held in the stink?
It's impenetrable. It's mob run.
It's just a New York calling card. It's like the pizza pie and the cabbies.
We got the bagel and the garbage.
It's the strewn garbage.
Ever since I moved to Los Angeles, all I can think about is where can I get that New York garbage on the street?
You want real New York garbage in L.A.
They bring in the water from New York, and then they pour it on the garbage and put heat lamps on it.
They fly in the rats on tiny aeroplanes.
We're having fun here on Jordan, Jesse, Go. We've got plenty more stuff to talk about. We'll be back in just a second with myself. Jordan Morris. Do you like this, how I'm saying the names at the end of every segment? No, because we say them at the beginning of every segment, so it's really only a 5 minute.
And the show also has our names in the title.
Yeah, and people are listening to it on their iPods. They probably have that has our names in the little picture.
A lot of access to our names.
But we want to become household names, Jordan. That's our goal, right? Isn't that why we started this, to become household names?
I think you should say your names at least once in the middle of the segments as well.
Yeah. Right. So just as a kind of a pick-me-up.
Yes.
Resetting is what they call it. Resetting.
Yeah.
Like a little kick in the pants.
Yeah.
I would say.
Mm-hmm. Kick in the pants. Yes.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan, Jesse, Go.
La, 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 la.
It's Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Rob Corddry, pants, pants, pants.
Nice. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan, have we talked about, there's the video game that I recently purchased. It's for the Nintendo Wii game console. I don't have a Nintendo Wii game console, so yeah. I had to think of someone I knew who had a Nintendo game console who I also needed to get a gift for in order to buy this.
Set of circumstances.
That's how important it is to me. It's called Imagine : Party Babies with a Z.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Imagine : Party Babies, Z at the end.
I'm on board.
Oh my god.
Was that from the makers? That's from the makers of Grand Theft Auto, right?
Yeah, that's from the Grand Theft Auto.
It's an immersive world.
This is actually from Rockstar East. You're thinking of Rockstar West.
It's a massive multiplayer online RPG.
How fast would you sign up for the $5 a month massively multiplayer online game where you're a baby and everyone's having a party?
Fast-ish.
Yeah.
What about this? Maybe it's tiered. Maybe it's free to play, free to create your own character, but it's $5 a month if you want to be a stogie-smoking, grown-up, you know, sort of a middle-aged Jewish agent baby character.
Wisecracking baby.
Exactly. You know,
Money well spent.
Yeah.
Like a baby that lights a cigar with a $20 bill. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Where's my baba? You know what I mean? Well, somebody took my binky. That's $5. That's the $5. That's the value.
It's the downloadable content.
That's how they monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
you know what I mean? You can buy it as an add-on in Xbox Live, in your Xbox Live marketplace. You can buy different sort of like, what do they call those? Modules.
Sure.
Baby system modules.
Mm-hmm. Skins.
God, I love it.
Skins.
I love it. I'm having fun. Did you guys notice my outfit today? This is a vacation outfit.
Oh.
This is...
That's kind of summery colors.
It is. It's transatlantic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Robert. Yeah. It's Does anybody ever call you Bobby? Can I call you Bobby?
My whole life I was called Bobby.
Okay, Bobby, I'll tell you. This is a transatlantic outfit. I'm climbing aboard a steamer. Later on today. And I want to be clear. I'm wearing a suit today, but this is a casual suit. I'm not trying to show anybody up. I'm wearing a khaki suit. I got on a button-down shirt. That's
summertime.
How casual I'm talking about. I got on this summer necktie. It's a cornflower blue and a peach, a pale peach.
My t-shirt has a bear on it.
The bear has a gun too.
Yeah, that's cool.
And ultimately I got white, you know, canvas tennis sneakers on. You know what I mean? And the reason is because I am, for the first time in my life, going to be traveling aboard a steamer ship.
you're going to throw your coat jacket over your shoulder and climb aboard a steamer.
Exactly.
And which passage are you taking?
I will be taking the Carnival Cruise Lines passage to exotic Ensenada, Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
They tell you the cruise is going down the Northwest Passage. Don't listen to them. It does not exist. It does not exist. Wow.
I only hope that my boardroom will be proximate to that of the Duke of Windsor.
Are you bringing all your art with you? In trunks?
Most certainly. I've collected some fantastic art from the local artisans in the desert communities of Southern California.
Oh, boy.
I travel with my own escargot forks.
Are you getting a divorce? Why are you going to, what's this place in Mexico?
Yes, I'm getting a divorce. I'm taking a cruise with my wife.
A divorce
to
cruise.
To get a quickie divorce.
It's what they call a hate cruise.
Are you getting an abortion?
myself and my special lady friend.
They're getting
Mrs. Teresa Thorne.
They're going to hold hands while they get, matching abortions.
Co-abortion.
Co-boarded. This is actually a plastic surgery cruise. Once you get offshore, you can do all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get something implanted under the skin of my skull.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now let's break this down because you don't seem to me like a cruise guy.
So typically, my travels have taken me to places like Switzerland. I've been to Switzerland. I've traveled to London, England. Yeah. I've traveled to Laos in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm. That's you.
So I have never
Laotian holiday.
Yeah, I have never been on a cruise. But this is, you guys are familiar with the collapse of the American economy, correct?
Gotcha, yes. Sure.
So this economy has collapsed and my plan had been, there's these nice condos for sale, down the street from, my apartment building here in this older building that got turned into condominiums. Mm-hmm. My plan had been to take advantage of the collapse in the American economy to, purchase a one bedroom condominium here in my inner city urban neighborhood. It turns out they still cost $450,000. Mm-hmm. So that was off the table. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what else can I do to take advantage of the collapse of the economy? And I read a newspaper article about how cruise ships were struggling to fill their berths or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I went on to like hotwire.com or something. And it turns out you can go on a cruise for $195. And that includes the cruise and the food and everything, everything you want, except the gambling and the booze. But since I'm a teetotaler and not much of a gambler, I'm not going to lose a lot of money on that. So we had this money that we had gotten for Christmas from my wife's parents. They had given us a couple $100 and told us to do something silly with it, you know, as a Christmas gift. But we couldn't think of anything good to do because every time we thought of something, you know, like we would be like, oh, we'll go like to Palm Springs for a weekend or something. It was way, way, way more than $250. Mm-hmm. So we looked and we were like, well, for $200, why not go on a stupid fucking cruise? Like, hey, it doesn't have to be that stupid. It has to be pretty stupid to overcome the fact that we're doing something ridiculous and it only costs $200. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, maybe we can rope somebody else into it. So I happened to be talking with our friend Lonely Sandwich from You Look Nice Today. And I said, have you ever thought about going on a cruise? And he said, absolutely not. And I said, what if I told you you could go on a cruise for $195? And he said, I'm in. So Mr. and Mrs. Lonely Sandwich are on board with us. So we figure, you know, we got some pals with us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And at the worst, at least we have some people to just mock the entire experience with.
I think that's smart and safe because otherwise you would be surrounded by, you know, that you'd have people that would glom onto you. I think you'd make some cruise friends.
You think we would make cruise friends?
Yes. My parents always went on cruises and they always came back having met the most lovely couple. From the Jersey Shore or whatever, like some horrible sounding people.
Now I'm excited about this.
I think that you're going to, but at least you have that insulation.
No one I know has ever been on a cruise as far as I, like, no, none of my like immediate relatives, none of my wife or her, any of her immediate relatives have ever been on a cruise. So my only understanding of a cruise, and I really sound, in saying this now, as I consider what I'm about to say, I sound like the most New Yorker subscribing asshole in the history of the world to say this. But my understanding of cruises comes from the David Foster Wallace essay, A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again, which is about him going on a cruise because he had never, he, you know, obviously as being David Foster Wallace, sure, had never been on a cruise. No. And so in his essay, the one thing he talks up is making cruise friends at his cruise dinner table with just these random fat people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This cruise.
Gee, but, Jesse, now you want to say you don't watch TV, you read? You want to say that?
I don't even, Jordan, I don't even own a television.
Yeah.
What I've been told, and now I didn't know anything about cruises. What I've been told is that my cruise that I'm going on is the absolute lowest of the low when it comes to cruises. Like, it's not the lowest of the low in the sense that they're just going to be feeding us porridge.
Mandatory dogfights.
Yeah, it's not like we've, you know, booked passage on a commercial junk that's going to be, you know,
it'll probably be sold in the white slavery.
No, you're not
going
to be
opium to the back from the Orient or something like that. But this is like the single most like spring break from Texas A&M cruise I could go on in the world. Like, someone told me that they went on one of these Carnival cruises, and it was exclusively morbidly obese people from Lubbock, Texas, most of whom were drunk in 19. And that is something that I think is going to be amazing.
I don't
know anything about this.
Well, how long are you going to? How long is
it? We leave on Friday evening and come back on Monday morning.
Perfect.
So
get into a fist fight while you're there.
I should get into a fist fight.
Yeah.
Quick question. Do you think they'll have Danny DeVito's limoncello there?
I can't imagine that they would.
Are you familiar with Danny DeVito's limoncello?
Yes,
he takes out full-page advertisements for it in numerous prestigious publications, including The New Yorker.
He makes a limoncello?
Yeah, it is limoncello.
Okay. Right.
And he also plays some sort of Italian lute or something. I'm just judging by the composition of the photograph.
Gotcha.
Someone emailed us and said that they make limoncello themselves. Do you think we should ask that listener to send us some limoncello?
Yes.
If they send us limoncello, I'll drink some.
I have a friend who I have some limoncello in my freezer.
Oh, yeah?
My friend Cynthia made us some limoncello.
Is it foul? I've heard the limoncello
pretty
is pretty foul.
It's pretty gross, yeah. It's pretty gross. It's very thick.
Oh, really?
It's syrupy, ugh. Sure.
It's syrupy, huh?
Very syrupy and sweet and,
Have you, getting back to cruise, have you ever been on a cruise before, Rob?
No, but I come from cruise going stock.
Sure.
My family goes on a lot of cruises.
You're one of the Massachusetts Cordrys.
Yes, I am of the Massachusetts Cordrys. I avoid a lot of cruises.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh God, no, I cannot make that family cruise.
Love to, but I have to.
To do something else.
Yes.
Far away
another
from that boat.
Thing.
But you know, I talk to my wife about it all the time. Like, we would also like to kind of give. It seems like a very easy vacation.
Yeah.
And but you do feel like you have to make it somewhat. I would have to make it make it educational or some stupid thing like that. So I would feel like I'm, or go to like Alaska. That seems like a more
cruise
where douchebags won't.
You can cruise to like Chichen Itza or something like that. I think there are some cruises where it.
But
ends
Chichen Itza
in...
is like another word for Cancun.
But the thing is,
as
you
long
go
as
to
Sammy
Chichen
Hagar
Itza.
Has a restaurant wherever we're going.
You know, I would like to maybe go somewhere like on one of those smaller boats. Actually, you know what? I would love to get the full Love Boat experience.
Right.
My dad came back from his first cruise,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, "You're not going to believe the amount of shrimp I ate."
That's my plan for the cruise.
You order a shrimp cocktail, and you eat the whole thing, and they ask you if you want another shrimp cocktail, and they just bring it to you.
That's what, I went, unfortunately, Jordan was out of town, so he couldn't participate in this, but another one of my good time experiments was I went on eBay to see how cheaply I could get hockey tickets, and I ended up buying 10 hockey tickets for $50.
Wow.
So I was like, $50, I'll spend $50 to invite 10 people to go see hockey with me, and so we just invited everyone we knew that might be willing to go. I mean, I'm not a hockey fan.
No.
I think it's. I'm fine with
fun.
It. But
yeah.
So I went to this hockey game, and the folks who went with us had been to one of these cruises, and what they told us was that they said some of the food was good, but some of the food wasn't as good. So what they would do is just order two entrees per person, and then anyone who got an entree they didn't like, they'd just eat one of the other entrees that was on the table.
So gluttonous.
Because you can just, they don't even care if they do that. That's totally allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, don't brag, Jesse. I make my own fun, too. I've tried masturbating with different masks on.
So, you're not the other one who can be creative, but
I know what it's like in a clown. I know what it's like in a dino.
You're having a sorry, honey. I'm having a prehistoric good time.
Dino noise.
Have you ever been on a cruise, Jordan?
No, you know, I think my family took one, but I have no, when I was younger, and I have really no recollection of it. I mean,
flashes of memory.
Here's actually the one thing I remember from the cruise. There was like a closed circuit TV on the cruise that showed just, you know, they had a block of programming that they showed on a loop. And I remember just over the course of the, you know, 6 days or however long it was, seeing Mr. Baseball and Sneakers like a dozen times.
Sneakers.
Do you think there could possibly in the world, in like Mr. Baseball and Sneakers is such a perfect distillation of 1991. Like, I feel like Mr. Baseball and Sneakers would be punchlines in The Winner. That's how, like, particularly 1991, 1992, those two things are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a Mr. Baseball birthday party. We all went to see Mr. Baseball, starring Mr. Tom Selleck.
Great. You just reminded me what Mr. Baseball was. I was kind of pretending I knew what Mr. Baseball was. Yeah. I definitely know what Sneakers is
Tom
now. I know
Selleck's,
exactly what Mr.
Tom
Baseball
Tom Selleck's
is.
Mustache is a
stars
guy
ass.
Stars as a fellow who's failed out of the American Major Leagues and signs a multi-million dollar contract to play baseball in Japan. And needless to say, this guy has a lot of cultural adjustments to make.
Mm-hmm. those people do talk weird.
That's true.
Yeah, they people talk crazy, and they're always
shorter
bowing.
Than most.
Oh, they're always bowing.
But you know what? They have a refined aesthetic that I really respect. I call it kind of zen.
Yeah.
It's sort of zen to me.
I imagine if you're in that situation, you're going to learn something.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? You're definitely going to learn something.
And you know what? Not just about life, but maybe also about love.
Probably. Let's just say umbrella about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
About yourself.
Sure.
Yeah.
But what about tatami mats? Because you'll probably learn about those too.
You probably learn, yeah, a lot of bare bones stuff you'll learn about.
Yeah, sure.
Driving traffic rules, you know. Yeah.
Like when you're supposed to take your shoes off.
Yeah,
or not.
Exactly. You know,
that kind of stuff. That's not so much about yourself as it is about
just getting along.
Others and their cultural expectations.
Getting around Tokyo.
Eel sauce.
It's hard. It's hard. The subway, you got to master the subway.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Do you guys think I'm going to have to do a lot of cultural adjustments? Coco's pissed off about that Mr. Baseball segment. Do you think I'm going to have to make a lot of cultural adjustments to learn how to live life in Ensenada, Mexico? Because as I understand it, one set of rules applies when you're in the States, but another set of rules applies when you're at Senior Frog's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lawless place. It's really the Wild West.
Sure.
You know, so I'd be careful because there's, Senior Frog's is an outpost, I believe.
I've heard
there.
that they have more
Dick's Last Resort, Cabo Wabo.
That the Hard Rock Cafe there is actually more oriented towards hard rock. Like Poison, or
it is actually celebrating hard rock down there.
So
yeah,
you don't.
It's more real.
There's no safety net there.
No.
You might have to see something Alex Cooper related, for example.
Yes.
You can't rely on seeing Rod Stewart stuff.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Soundgarden bass guitars.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a bum 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 bum. You know what I mean, guys?
Yes. Yeah.
We're all on the
have
same page, right?
Have a great time. Yeah. Have a super
take another
time.
Wife while you're down there.
Yeah.
I would love to have two wives.
You can get away with anything.
You know what?
There.
I can't
Are you
say
prepping
stuff
her
like
for
that.
Something like that.
You know what? I can't say anything like this anymore. You know why? I found out that our audience is full of finks. You know,
our
audience is full of finks. You know how I found out?
Finks, yeah.
At some point in this program's 3-year history, or however long we've been doing this show, at some point in this program's history, I said something about Teresa's sister Frances being a brat when she was a teenager and younger, or possibly being a very mean child who was really mean to my wife and beat her up. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact she was 2 years younger, mm-hmm. Which is true. Both of those are true. I'm a big fan of Teresa's sister, Frances. Great lady. Very grown up now. She was a bratty teen, and she was a nightmarish small child. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's just the facts. But it turns out that up in Portland, Oregon, land of the Finks, there's some young ladies who listen to this program and then report back to Francis, who then reports back to my wife anything I say that's bad, anything that could get me in trouble. My wife doesn't have time to listen to this. She has to listen to me talk all the time.
She probably hears you talk about it, too. Oh, man, I had this great line on the podcast
exactly.
today.
Exactly. Jordan, I mean, look, Teresa has to listen to me and Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, whenever Jordan comes to visit or we're hanging out and she's around, the essential part of our lifestyle is us trying to make jokes to impress each other. Like, that's the entire emotional basis of our relationship that's been going on since we were...
Which is to say, no emotional basis.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the center of what we do here, right?
Right.
And so Teresa doesn't need to listen to that.
Yeah.
Which is why I feel like I should be able to say something off color, to make a silly joke about something, about taking a second wife, except that it turns out there's Sphinx.
See, this is your special place. This is your, this is the thinking man's man cave.
Exactly.
And she's not allowed in here.
You know, and neither are Finks.
No, neither are Finks. Listen.
Stop snitching.
Finks. Keep it to yourself, okay?
I've got a chain and I know how to use it for beatings.
Yeah.
Of Finks.
Now, if there's anybody in Orange County, don't tell my mom I made that masturbating joke.
Jesse
is, by the way, taking off his shirt. He has a knife open and he's snapping like the West Side Story guys.
I have no shirt on.
He's gone full Puerto Rican.
Yeah, right. Yes. He's getting swarthier by the second.
Can my nickname be full Puerto Rican for the rest of this show?
Yeah, sure.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan Jesse Go. It's Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. Oh, wait. No. It's Jordan, Jesse, Go. It's Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, full Puerto Rican.
I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And I'm Rob Corddry.
It sounds racist now that we say it out of context.
Yeah, it does. You are. It is racist.
It is?
It's purely racist.
I'm a racist?
You're a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't think it's racist. You're an even worse racist.
Fuck.
Yeah, you broke racism.
It's a secret.
And then,
fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck my balls.
That's racist, too.
Yep.
It is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a Aboriginal tribe that
with
fucks
just really big
purely
balls?
With the balls.
It just fucks with balls. You didn't know that? Racist.
Jeez, man.
Wow.
Get a world view
although,
that's not so narrow.
Although, honestly, before when it was against Puerto Ricans, I felt bad. But I do hate Aboriginal people.
I do, too.
The Aboriginal people of...
Look at me.
Yeah, exactly. Look at my... I made a painting.
Exactly.
That's how they make a painting.
Totally.
They put their hand up and they go...
Fucking queers. <Okay.
laughs> Wow. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm in trouble now.
Yeah.
I'm a native San Franciscan. So I have like a permanent, I feel like I'm a permanent political correctness, like tolerance level.
No, Jesse, what you were doing is you were drawing attention to how comic racism is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that though? That you know, I know Seth Morris, a mutual friend of ours, who's also from
legendary improviser. He guest hosted on the show a month or two ago.
Sure, tall person. He's from San Francisco, and we had a hard.
He's from Marin.
He's from Marin.
Continue.
And I've known him for a long time, and he uh,
he's very he can be very politically correct, or at least he can he doesn't like my sarcasm, because I feel like that, or I think he thinks that's an East Coast thing. Sarcasm is strictly like a Route 95 kind of thing, you know? Do you? I don't know if sarcasm.
Wasn't Seth Morris as a Pilates instructor for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So that's what kind of fellow that guy is.
There's your context. Let's move on.
Seth Morris to me is an amazing man, specifically because of his combination of being such a gifted improviser, and truly one of the most gifted improvisers that there is, no doubt about it, and perfectly comfortable in the context of a astonishingly profane improvisational scene, and you get the impression, oh, this is what kind of dude this guy is. But then he has this second life as a former Pilates instructor.
Yep.
Those two things together make him a special man to me.
A little too good looking to be in comedy.
Yeah, also maybe. A very handsome fellow.
Yeah, a little too good looking. That's a good point. That is a good point.
Yep.
And not only that, his core is a little bit too strong to be in comedy.
He's
kind of
let himself go a little bit. He's looking funnier and funnier.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Good.
He grew that creepy mustache for a while. Had a real creepy mustache.
He has a lot of weird facial hair. He's very creative with his facial hair.
Oh, speaking of creativity, Rob, here on the program, we have a segment called Momentous Occasions. What we ask is that when something remarkable or special happens to one of our listeners, that they call in at 206-984-4FUN, our hotline number, and let us know either as it happens or in the immediate aftermath. Mm-hmm. We call it momentous occasions. It can range from anything from losing one's virginity to being locked on the porch by the children that you were supposed to be babysitting.
And so, kind of more recently, a guy being set up on a weird date with the wife of the man that his wife was cheating on him with.
So the guy who called in was being cuckolded.
Mm-hmm.
And
their solution to being caught was, hey, why don't you go on a date with my wife? And they went to see Watchmen.
It's a date movie. That's
why. 2 hour and 40 minute movie.
Yeah, it's a good date movie. Don't you feel like probably in the Jordan Jesse Go audience, like a plural marriage is probably over. What do they call that? Polyamory.
Polyamory
probably overrepresented. Don't you feel like there's more polyamorous people in the Jordan Jesse Go audience than there is in, like, that kind of weird shit is going on more with our listeners than in a random sample?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Yes. Call in and tell us about your polyamorous marriage.
You're going on a cruise with another couple.
Don't tell us about your polyamorous marriage. I feel like if somebody calls in and tells us about their polyamorous marriage, it's going to be so fucking boring.
No, you can tell me. You can tell me about it. I'm kind of curious.
You are wearing your dinosaur mask right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And jerking it.
Anyway, momentous occasions.
Gonna put it up.
Hi, JJ Go. This is Lee from New York. I'm calling with a momentous occasion. I'm on improveverywhere.com, and I'm watching this video about. I'm watching this video wherein people are singing and dancing in a food court as part of their Improv Everywhere MO, I guess. And at one point, the janitor character announces he's going to dance and throws a broom at none other than you, Jesse, which I thought was amazing. And so I'm curious why you didn't mention this on Jordan Jesse Go. And if you did, I'm curious why I don't remember it. Excellent cameo.
Blah, 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 blah. The reason that I played this is not because it's actually momentous. It's a good example of something that's not momentous, actually.
Sure. It's something not to do.
However, I did want to seize this opportunity because
to
I
brag
was
about
tired
a thing
of,
you
no,
did.
I'm tired of getting emails about it. Yes, that is me. The thing is, it's like I'm not on screen for very long, and I actually sang a little bit of the song, but they cut that bit of the song out in the video that's on the website. So, because I'm a horrible, horrible singer. So,
were you a mark, or were you involved?
I was involved in it. It was when our friend Charlie Todd from Improv Everywhere came out here to Los Angeles to shoot some of the stuff for when he made a TV pilot of Improv Everywhere. They made this thing for it. Oh. So he just invited people he knew in LA to come do it with him. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's me. We're done with it now.
Stop bugging him.
Really, people really, a lot.
Hi, Jordan Jesse Go. My name is Dan. I have a momentous occasion. I work in a library, and just now I met a person named Dobson. Until now, I thought Jordan made that name up. But now I see Jordan, I guess, was right all along.
So, Rob, just to fill you in on the background here, Jordan has come up with, you've probably been in a situation where you're writing something. You've probably done a fair share of writing. Best known, of course, as an actor, but certainly you've done your fair share of writing.
You wrote all those children's hospitals, didn't you?
Sure, yeah, sure. Streamy nominated, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Streamy
okay,
nominated.
Go on. What do you mean?
Okay.
Go on. Sounds like a P award.
So.
First annual Streamies.
Wow.
Yes, coming up soon. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you think the Streamies could be sponsored by Flomax? I'm just throwing out an idea. You've written things, and one of the great challenges in writing something is coming up with a great name for a fictional character, because you can't take a real person's name and use it, because it could be a basis of a libel suit or something like that. And when you make up something, it has to have a certain je ne sais quoi, but it can't, you know, there's also, it can't be too phony, baloney, you know what I mean? So Jordan came up with two names that are the best names that a character could have. If you want to say them, Jordan.
Chip Dipson and Dip Dobson.
So that's why it's of consequence.
Gotcha,
and
just
so you know, if you're ever writing something, we've released
like
these into the Creative Commons.
That's nice.
So
thank you.
If you want to, we have decided that if you want to name a character Chip Dipson or Dip Dobson in anything, we will not take that as stealing Jordan's idea, but rather we'll accept it as a tribute.
I am writing the second season of Children's Hospital as
awesome.
We speak, and Brian Husky is playing an EMT, and his name will be Chip Dipson. I promise you.
Yay! Woo!
History has been made.
That's better than the guy who named his World of Warcraft character that.
Somebody named his World of Warcraft character that, and then 6 months later, he emailed us to show a screen capture of a search for that name.
Yeah.
Now there's 10 World of Warcraft characters named Chip Dipson. I want them to fight each other.
That's not how it works.
Hi, Jordan, Jesse Go. This is Rebecca from Boston, and I'm calling with a momentous occasion. I have my first foster care placement today, a little 1.5-year-old boy named Angel who won't stop crying, which is understandable, but it's a new adventure, and I thought, wow, you'd like that, but you might not. All right, bye.
We totally like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We really like that.
Like
how
that
fucking great is
I'm
that, huh?
I'm really moved by that call.
Your pants are moved, if you know what I mean.
Strangely excited by that
call. Gorilla mask, anyone?
Any talk of foster children, get me rock hard in a second.
Don't you feel like that is just what a great momentous occasion,
that
right?
That is truly a momentous occasion.
That is
occasion.
What momentous
Absolutely.
Occasions are all... Well, no. Okay. Momentous occasions are all about the guy who is going on a date with the wife of the man who cuckolded him.
Yeah, I think also Dobson's a pretty good momentous occasion.
Yeah, that's also a solid momentous occasion.
But that is truly
But that is really special.
Yeah.
That's awesome, right? And I would never have thought of that. If you gave me 100 years, I would have thought of all of the, you know, losing my virginities, getting married, bought my first house that we've all already had.
Yeah.
This one is truly special. If you have a momentous occasion, 206-984-4FUN is the number to call. We strongly suggest that people program that into their cellular telephones so that when something momentous is happening, all they have to do, it's like the London train bombing.
Put it in your favorites.
You just take out your cell phone and start shooting. In this case, start shooting video with your cell phone.
Gotcha.
In this case, you take out your cell phone.
Although my cell phone does shoot bullets. Go ahead. Go ahead.
How are they normal?
It was a Christmas
bullets?
Yes.
It was a Christmas gift
bullets.
From the Gersh Agency.
Yes.
The Hollywood.
Seriously, 25% of people in Hollywood have one of these guns.
I would like to thank my representation.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chip Dipson at Gersh.
You know, I'm at CAA and all I got was a fruit basket. 206-984-4FUN. Put it in your cell phone. We'll be back in just a second on Jordan Jesse Go. It's Jordan, Jesse Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
What does that look mean, Rob?
Robert Cordry.
Bobby, what are you doing to me?
Bobby Cordry.
What's going on here? You're freaking out.
Yeah, I'm freaking out. I just started freaking out a little bit. I just got nervous.
Yeah.
This is, people are going to hear this?
Yeah.
The whole thing? Like the whole...
Well, yeah.
Can you cut out most of...
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Of just whatever.
Did I say anything really embarrassing or... I just smoked a lot of weed during that last break, and I got very paranoid.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just kept going over everything we've been talking
about.
Remember
that glass of water I gave you right before the show?
Yeah, yeah.
Did I tell you that was weed water?
No.
I bought it at the dispensary. That's a new thing, weed water.
That's why I felt like going out and getting high again.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
it's probably why
talk,
it tasted so non-watery.
Did we talk about Dr. Pepper? Did I dream that?
No, that was... Yeah, we talked about that.
Can you cut that out, please?
No,
I'm so embarrassed.
You guys, we did not talk about that.
Do you have like a sponsorship with Mr. Pibb or something?
Yeah,
is that a conflicting?
Talk about Dr. Pepper.
Oh boy,
the Dr. Shasta people are going to be very upset.
We'll talk after. We'll talk after.
Okay. Grease the palms. Give us a little bit of that Mr. Pibb money, and we'll see what we can do.
The deep pockets of Mr.
Yes.
Pibb.
Oh,
it's a short story I'm writing.
Oh,
Rob, before we call it a podcast, you actually had your own momentous occasion. Am I right?
We were just talking momentous occasions. A couple of years ago, I went back, 10 years probably, went back to get reacquainted with my ex-girlfriend. We dated for probably about 7 years, and this was
we hadn't spoken
for a year or two. And yeah. We got together and we had a
great
time.
Did you make the trip specifically for
this? No, I was there for the Chicago Improv Festival,
okay.
And then she was living in Chicago. And we hung out. We had a great time, and we've been friends ever since. But she introduced me to her boyfriend, now husband, and great guy. And she went to work. He took me he's a trapeze artist. He took me to the trapeze in the middle of a Chicago museum. It was this thing they were having. And he took me up to the top of the flying trapeze and was going to let me go. I was going to give it a try, and
see,
I was
now
terrified.
I'm going to interject something here really quickly. If I was going to the top of a trapeze with my former long-term girlfriend's new boyfriend, I would have safety concerns.
Sure. No. Very kind, warm-hearted person. Never.
Do not trust circus folk.
There's a net.
Yeah. Do not trust circus folk.
I think
folk.
He fancies himself an artist.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trapeze guys are different. They fancy themselves.
Yeah, this isn't
a
like
step
a,
above the
this isn't
normal
a carny.
Carny.
They all, but that's the thing. They all fancy themselves that way.
That's true.
What makes they think that doing a weird circus thing is an artsy thing
point
and
taken.
Not just roughly equivalent to being a professional Renaissance fair employee.
Like clowns, like for instance, I hate it when people say they're afraid of clowns. I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
I just hate clowns because they take themselves so fucking seriously.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a lost art, Rob.
It's lost for a reason.
Yeah, spoken like someone who's never done Commedia dell'arte.
Okay. You got me.
Rob. You know, we love you and Harold and Kumar and what happens in Vegas, but the real comedy.
You would make
comedy.
A great Punchinello.
I was just trying to think of the clown's name, the patchworked Harlequino.
You might make a very good Il Dottore too.
Thank
worth
you.
Considering. Okay, so
here's what I want your agents to start selling you as an emboldened servant type.
Well, he would be like my agent would do that, and he'd say it just keeps people guessing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just keep
What's
them
next?
Guessing.
What's next?
The
from
thing.
You?
You know what? Oh, you know what? I feel like Rob's agent has been selling him as an emboldened servant, and he would be better served being sold as a young lover.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Am I right, Rob,
yes,
or am I right?
Who
gets
right.
set up by the emboldened servants.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did we mention that I've worked with Oliver Stone? Have we talked about that?
We did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I believe you worked on the film that was in his...
He directed Harold and Kumar, too.
Yeah. I was going to say, the film that was closest to his sort of center of skill and ability, the political satire farce, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway,
so 60
you're at the
political films.
You're at the top of trapeze.
Yeah.
Or as I call it, a death trapeze.
Death trapeze.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of guy
is this guy?
He's a very.
Is he like a lanky,
short and stocky, and very muscular but stocky? Yeah.
He's got a compact center of gravity.
Yes. That's the kind of the build you want for a trapeze artist.
Yes, I think so. His ample arms were wrapped around my waist.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I was, you really have to lean out very far to hold the trapeze. It's very scary. And I was terrified. And that's when I felt the tip of his penis. Flaccid penis.
Flaccid.
Against my behind.
Were you wearing trapezing clothes?
I was wearing, I must have been,
they
had said
you
loose
borrowed,
clothing.
Trapezing pants?
No, I must have been wearing some kind of sweat pant.
Sure.
Because you just can't go trapezing in jeans.
Because this is like, what, 1998, and that was your...
It was about 98, 97, 98,
that,
yeah.
So that was your sweatpants period.
So yeah.
You rarely got out of sweatpants in your life. Yeah.
I did have a sweatpants
even
period.
For traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were on The Daily Show, we often saw you behind a desk. Maybe they didn't see, waist down.
You were enormously fat.
White socks.
Waist down, you were corpulently obese.
I was a mutant, a news mutant. The very tip of his
Let's
penis.
Let's get back to the tip of this penis.
Bouncing against my hindquarters.
Let me ask you
this
question.
He's bouncing against it, too, because he was kind of holding me.
There's a rhythmic situation.
Let's
to
say
the
your butt had been made out of, rather than flesh, it had been made out of Sculpey.
Go ahead.
Then you had baked.
I'm with you.
Then you had baked your butt afterwards.
Go ahead.
Would you be able to use that as a mold to create a new trapeze wiener?
I would be able to use that, not knowing whether he was circumcised or not.
Mm-hmm.
I would be able to use probably the very tip of his trapeze wiener.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'd be able to fashion.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That could come in handy.
I have a clear sense memory of it as well. Like a very clear.
Have you ever used that in your work?
Saving that one.
Right.
I'm saving that one for the right time.
Oscar moment.
You have to bank your moments.
You're going to be since you're shooting this movie, a hot tub time machine.
I imagine I might get a chance to use it sense memory work.
Well, because you're going to be working with what? Clark Duke, right?
And
Craig Robinson,
and the
John Cusack. If you're working with Cusack. Seems like a great opportunity because he's known for the tip of his wiener, isn't he? Isn't that what he was?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh,
no.
You're talking about his sister, Joan. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
What a pleasure.
That's the wiener you're thinking of.
You know, Jordan, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to view Rob Corddry's Streamy Award-nominated internet video film, General Hospital. What's it called? Children's Hospital. Children's Hospital. I watched the whole nine yards. You were a guest on The Sound of Young America.
It was difficult to watch, too,
because the WB.com is a shitty, shitty website.
Well, they actually revamped it because we were getting so many hits.
Oh, really?
They destroyed it, and they made it. It's a better player now.
Oh, that's good. That's
a shitty website.
It was a train wreck of a website. Yeah. I could not figure out how to do anything with it.
Terrible.
It didn't like my browsers. It was a real situation.
No one. My mother couldn't watch it for like a week.
But nowadays, it's been revamped. I think it's on some. There's some of it is on YouTube and whatnot as well.
Well, there's the trailers on YouTube.
Okay,
trailers. It's part of my deal that it's going to be released. They call it syndication.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be released internet-wide, but you know, I'm not sure when that's going to happen.
You're making another one too, right?
And we're doing it for TV. It's going to be on.
Really?
It's either going to be on Adult Swim or Comedy Central. We're in something of a bidding war.
It should be, man. That's like basically like stuff on the internet, even stuff made by people that I love, usually is not funny. That was exceptionally funny.
Very funny work. Yeah.
I hope we can. You know, I'm going to have a lot of other people help me write the second season because it's going to be like 12, 11-minute episodes. So it's twice as much stuff. So I'm going to have some help. I think David Wayne and Ken Marino are going to write a couple. And
that's
Paul Scheer and Rob Hubel are going to write a couple.
You can't. That's heavy hitters.
I would love to have Robert, Tim, and Eric, too.
Bobby, you are bringing in some heavy hitters right now.
Yeah.
If you're talking about a David Wayne, you're talking about a Ken Marino.
Yeah.
You're talking about a Paul Scheer. You're talking about a Rob Hubel.
Yeah.
You're talking about heavy hitters.
Heavy hitters.
Sure.
Yeah, A-Team.
Murderers
Row. First string.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was noteworthy about the Children's Hospital, so ridiculous, so silly, but it had all of those comic performers nowadays who just really commit to that ridiculousness, and it like had this gravity that was almost upsetting throughout the hilariousness.
Now, tell me this. Do you think you could get away with, because that's the kind of comedy I like, just sure. Take no winking at all, just taking it very seriously. Do you think you can get away with that on like a half an hour show?
It's a challenge.
I mean, I know yeah. Children's Hospital is just kind of like a loose framework to write sketches, right? But mm-hmm. It's basically a sketch show. But like, could you do that for an actual narrative show, like a comedy? But it's not a comedy like in,
well,
in the
isn't
way 30
that,
Rock
well,
is.
Well, that would be like like a Police Files.
Police Files or Airplane,
yeah.
Right?
I yeah. Mean,
it's the same kind of...
Police Squad, is that
yeah,
what it's
police
called?
Police Squad, yeah.
Police Squad.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it sounds like, I mean, it'll in that kind of Adult Swim... you know, time block. I mean, that's a kind of a guaranteed home run, I think. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. They're also making it, they're sort of launching, if we go with Adult Swim, they're going to be launching their prime time with it. They're going to go to 9 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah, that's late cool. Late prime time.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Nine,
so
nine,
can
30.
Get a little naughty.
You're looking,
a little,
at, you're looking at LPT, but
yeah.
Still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have fun. Rob Corddry, what a pleasure to have Rob Corddry here, huh?
Great Friday. What a great day.
Oh, God. And now I'm going to go on a cruise.
I'm going to take Vicodin.
Oh, I'm going to do something else.
Oh, gosh. Well, it was fun. Oh, shit. Before we go, I got an action item for this week's show.
Yeah.
Holy shit, this is important.
Cruise
action
related.
Item. It's cruise related. Okay, we were talking about making friends on cruises. Mm-hmm. I want to know who is the craziest and or most fascinating person or personal interaction you ever had while you were on vacation. So out of town, out of country, what person have you met that was the weirdest, the strangest experience you ever had, the person that you met? 206-984-4FUN is the number to call. 206-984-4FUN. Leave us a message. Tell us who that was. We'll talk about it next week. Our theme music, Love You by the Free Design, from the best of the Free Design, which is called Kites Are Fun, courtesy of Light in the Attic Records on the Free Design. Thank you so much. It's a wonderful song. And we'll talk to you next time on Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Bye.